Tonight we finish our five-week journey through John's Bread of Life discourse. It took us 5 weeks to read about 70 verses in the sixth chapter of John's Gospel. In the beginning of that, we saw many people drawn to him, and then we saw many people puzzled at his words that one must eat his flesh and drink his blood if they desire to have life within them. And then we saw people murmuring, and then we saw them quarreling among themselves about what he could possibly mean when he claims that his flesh is true food and his blood is true drink. And I think part of me is always hoping that this chapter would end with Jesus being able to finally convince everyone of the truth of his claims, and that everyone would finally come to believe in him. I think I'm always hoping that this chapter would end with people drawing closer to Jesus, that despite all their fears and their doubts and their trembling and their disbelief, that they would see the truth in him and give up everything to follow him. But then I remembered the life of a young man who, when presented with the same Jesus and the same miracles and the same spirit and the same life as the disciples, a young man who still doubted and hesitated to give everything to Jesus. I remembered how it was possible for that young man, on the one hand, to believe in Jesus and to be confused by Christ, to be attracted to Jesus and to be fearful of Christ. My judgments of those early disciples went away when I thought of the life of that young man and the trials that he experienced to come to faith in Jesus, but also how, through the goodness of that same Jesus, that young man stands before you now as a priest. Certainly, the last number of weeks have given every Catholic person around the world a reason to stop, to gather himself or herself, and to really take stock of why he or she remains a Catholic. Further, each of us have been given reason to stop and to evaluate what kind of Catholic we would like to be. Not the kind we are, necessarily, but to ask ourselves, what do we ultimately desire for our lives? And from whom do we ultimately believe that we will receive the fulfillment of those desires? What do I believe will ultimately satisfy me? And from whom do I believe I will receive those things that satisfy me? Our current Western mindset teaches us that unless something can be empirically proven by the scientific method, that we cannot presume it is true. The funny thing, of course, is that that statement can't be proven by the scientific method, so that argument is over in a matter of moments. But the mindset remains. The picks or it didn't happen mindset informs rather a lot of what we undertake. And so it might seem strange for me or for you or any of us to admit that on the one hand, we really do believe in the Church, in what she teaches and in what she proposes to us. But on the other hand, to admit that while we believe it's true, we still doubt. We still wonder. We still investigate what all of these mysteries reveal to us and what they ultimately propose about our life on this earth and about life in union with God forever and about what it means to be human in the truest and purest sense. And so if someone were to ask me, Father Ryan, why do you remain Catholic? I think that that's what I would tell them. It's not because I'm forced to believe in something, but because I believe in a God and in a Church who simply proposes to me a deposit of faith, which I find to be incredibly satisfying and convincing, even if I don't understand every single iota of it. But I know that I can investigate it and study it and learn about it in a mind kind of way, reading a book, but that the one who has been the proposer from the beginning has made it possible for us to be in a relationship with him on a personal level as well. And that's faith. The decision to stay, to remain engaged, and to lean in and investigate in the face of doubts and uncertainties, that is faith. Christianity, and we've said this so many times, Christianity is not the result of some lofty decision or the gathering together of people who share common Judeo-Christian values. Christianity comes into our lives in exactly the same way that it first came into the world, as an encounter, a shock of grace, a tiny baby, a light in the darkness that satisfies even our deepest desires. Christianity remains for us now, even as it was at the beginning, an encounter with a person named Jesus, whom perhaps we have never met, but upon meeting him, upon seeing him for the first time, however and wherever that first moment of meeting might happen, we look at him and our hearts ask a question that they have asked a million times. Our hearts ask the question that it's asked a million times. It's asked things like sports, and it's asked work, and it's asked alcohol, and it's asked hobbies, and it's asked family, and it's asked job performance and prestige and reputation and power and wealth and honor. The heart asks the question in this case only as a formality, because when faced with Jesus, the one who will ultimately fulfill you, your heart already knows the answer. The question, are you the one? Are you the one who has come at last? Are you the one for whom my heart and my mind and my body and my very being is yearning? Are you the one who will ultimately satisfy the parts of me that no thing on this earth has ever been able to? Are you the one? And Jesus will answer, as he has answered so many times, I am. I am the bread of life. I am the resurrection. I am the way and truth and life. I am the light of the world. I am the narrow gate. I am the vine. I am the good shepherd. Remember that Jesus came to save all of us, but he does it by saving each of us. One little heart, one broken heart, one crying heart, prideful heart, vainful heart, sad heart, happy heart, mad heart, lustful heart, one heart at a time. True conversion requires of us so much vulnerability to stand naked before Jesus and say, I'm not enough. I'm not enough for this. I can't save myself. I can't get myself out of these trials. And the beauty and the joy and the companionship and the affirmation and the love that I seek, the desires of my heart that I seek to fulfill, I have not been able to fulfill them. But something, Lord, tells me that you are the one. He has come to reveal you to you. He's come to reveal me to myself. Lately, I've been reading The Chronicles of Narnia by C.S. Lewis, getting in touch with my inner fifth grader. Which I think if I would have read that book, by the way, in fifth grade, I totally would not have understood it. It's so fascinating. C.S. Lewis is the man, in case you didn't know, but that book, it will welcome and awake your imagination in ways that you have never thought. So in the second book of the Chronicles, called The Horse and His Boy, the main character is a little boy named Shasta, and he's lost and alone in the mountains as he tries to carry out his mission of warning the people of Arshinland that the Calormenes are coming to attack. And as he walks through the night alone in thick fog, he senses that there is someone walking next to him, a presence walking near him. and he immediately becomes afraid, thinking that it's a ghost or someone to kidnap him. So afraid, the little boy, Shasta, asks, "Who are you?" And the thing says, "I am one who has waited long for you to speak." Its voice was not loud, but very large and deep. The thing revealed himself as the lion. And in Narnia, of course, the lion always refers to Aslan, the son of the emperor beyond the sea. And in the writing of C.S. Lewis, Aslan is always a Christ figure. The lion says, "I was the lion who forced you to join Aravis, a friend. I was the cat who comforted you among the houses of the dead. I was the lion who drove the jackals from you while you slept. I was the lion who gave the horses new strength of fear for the last mile so that you could reach the goal in time. And I was the lion you do not remember, who long ago pushed the boat in which you lay, a child near death, so that it came to shore where a man sat, wakeful at midnight to receive you." And Shasta asks, "So it was you who wounded my friend Aravis, but why?" And the lion replies, "I'm telling you your story, not hers. I tell no one any story but his own." If you give him the chance, Jesus will tell you your story from the perspective of reality and truth, because he is the one who has been a part of that story from the very beginning, even when we existed merely as a thought in the mind of the Father. But those who choose to remain in darkness, to choose every means of self-fulfillment and pleasure, who notice their desire to meet and to stay with the one who knows and will fulfill them, to notice that desire but to choose to ignore it, they are the ones who return, as the disciples did, to their former way of life and no longer accompany the Lord. But your heart knows infallibly what corresponds to its longing. Your heart knows automatically and without error what corresponds to its longing, even before your brain does. The people who seek light, who seek truth, who are nourished by the sacraments, who maintain a life of intimate prayer in which Jesus reveals himself and in that process reveals you, these are the ones who are the saints, who are the light in the darkness for those around them. And Jesus asks his disciples, and he asks you, so humbly, quietly, "Do you also want to leave?" Once posed with that question, perhaps the many obstacles to our faith appear in our head. We see doubts, we see ridicule, we see the pleasure that we once had in sin, the appeal of rebellion against our parents and their traditions. We hear our friends as they mock us for going to Mass. We see their lives, which on the outside look so joyful. But at the end of the day, once everything is said and done, and we've seen so many options for happiness and truth and joy and beauty exhausted in vain, there is for the disciple only one response. "Do you also want to leave? Master, to whom shall we go? We have come to believe and are convinced that you are the Holy One of God. We believe and are convinced that you reveal man to himself, that you are really the only arbiter of truth and grace and beauty and justice and joy in this world. We believe and are convinced that suffering in a life with you is far better for us than all of the joys that the world can give. And in the midst of all of this nonsense going on in the world and in politics and particularly in our church today, we remember that we are belonging to Jesus Christ, that he is real and alive and risen and in our midst right now, and that he will always reveal what is true and what is good, despite the best efforts of the men who claim to serve him to silence him. Remember that we do not leave Jesus because of Judas. We come to see Jesus glorified because of Judas. Our hearts will ask, Are you the one? And we have come to believe and are convinced that yes, Jesus, you are the one. So decide today whom you will serve.